Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me, and it is March Madness. This episode will be about Michigan at the Big Ten tournament, what we saw from Indianapolis, and then in the second half of the show, we'll talk about what we expect to see in Indianapolis, but this time for the NCAA tournament. Tons of stories from this weekend over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com. Had a nice time, boots on the ground for it. So lots of takeaways, lots of thoughts. And then in the next couple days, it's a little tricky to do like the direct preview stuff because Michigan's opponent is unknown actually for the first round. And so it might come a little bit once things get going on Thursday and Friday as well, but there'll be some looks at the overall region along with some Michigan specific storylines as well. If you like this podcast or any of our podcasts, because we have episodes devoted to football, episodes devoted to recruiting, Tim McCormick and Sam Webb do a weekly basketball podcast as well. You can subscribe, you can tell your friends about it, throw us a rating, a review. Definitely like the nice reviews. And you know, we just love the audience. We really appreciate you guys following along. I was kind of looking at the growth we've had in the last year, which this is not the year you would think to kind of grow your sports media coverage. I mean, we went months without sports. And so just a quick appreciation, quick thank you to the listeners, to the people who provide questions when we do mailbags, people who kind of encourage us, or I think a couple times in the summer, I it kind of slipped my mind and they'd be like, are you guys doing one soon? We really look forward to it. And so then, you know, it's just been fun. I know Steve feels the same way. It's a nice, one of my favorite content pieces to do during the week, you know, kind of get to assess the news. So anyway, with that said, we'll start with Michigan in the Big Ten tournament. Steve, they went 1-1. They beat Maryland. They lost to Ohio State, but so much happened. This was my column and kind of takeaway from the weekend is for being in the Big Ten tournament for like 26 hours, I don't know if Michigan's ever had such a busy 26 hours. So they played the two games. They were down double digits in both games. They came back in both games. They had a season ending injury. Juwan Howard got ejected. Mike Smith set a record, and then the next, you know, there were some incredible shooting slumps. I'm trying to make sure I got everything. Eli Brooks made a surprise return from injury. So the weekend was all over the place. If you could offer just kind of your quick summary of your impression of their performance, it's I know Michigan fans are kind of doing the old, like, kind of writing, putting it on the back burner. It doesn't mean as much. They went 1-1. They're not putting a ton of stock into it. Michigan's going to get a reset anyways, but very busy weekend. And I think it was a weekend, in my opinion, where Michigan came away maybe with more questions than answers, but your thoughts on the Big Ten tournament?
I mean, I'm not like surprised necessarily at how it played out. You know, I had Mike Smith as my player to watch, or however we phrased it.
Well, we did player on the spot. So it was a player that had to step up in that sense. But
and he was their best player against Maryland and was the, you know, took the last shot against Ohio State, who was the non-Illinois Iowa team I picked to potentially give Michigan problems because of Dwayne Washington's ability to hit anything and everything from deep. So in a lot of ways, it played out exactly as I anticipated it would.
I know you did not predict Juwan Howard would get ejected.
No, not at all.
Or I mean, Isaiah Livers would suffer a season-ending.
Of course not. And to be honest with you, I think the context of how the game against Ohio State played out, I actually come out of it maybe slightly encouraged as far as what Michigan can do in the tournament. Because again, I mean, what'd they shoot? 65% from three or something. I mean, again, I say this saying that I was worried about Ohio. If you're Michigan, to be worried about Ohio State for that exact reason, where Washington can I think he's going to be a really good professional player because
I was just going to say he looks like a pro.
He does. Point, absolutely. Because of that ability alone, to where he takes and makes some crazy shots, some shots that look crazy for other players, but he makes them at a high rate anyway, but he seems to make them at an even higher rate when Michigan's playing Ohio State, you know, because he just had his way again. But without the first taste of what Michigan will look like without Isaiah Livers, I thought overall the fight at the end, you know, I still feel like Michigan, still, like I said, I still feel encouraged. I think maybe I felt better coming out of that game looking at Michigan, given the fact that Livers isn't going to be around for a while, if at all, the rest of the for the however long they go through the tournament. I think Brandon John's confidence is growing. I loved the sequence in the first half where they fed him the ball three or four times in a row down the floor. I thought that was perfect. I think it was clearly by design. It was fruitful. He got to the line, what, four trips in a row or three or four trips in a row? I think that was a clear confidence-building situation for him. I think that was a concerted effort, knowing that they're going to have to rely on him a lot more and to get his confidence going. So I loved that more than almost anything that happened in the game, because he is definitely someone now who's going to play an important role for them. So, yeah, overall, I was again, you want to win that game if you're Michigan. I just think Illinois is a bad matchup for Michigan. I could not have seen Michigan winning. Or on top of that, I don't know if they'd have played them as closely as Ohio State ended up playing them either, right? I just feel like Illinois is not a good matchup. Too deep at the guard positions. Not enough guys that can cover Curbelo, Dosunmu, and Frazier, right?
Yeah.
You got Coburn down low, who gave Dickinson more problems physically than – anybody, which is not a surprise because he's just physically the best center probably in the country. So they just feel, I mean, Illinois is a bad matchup for almost anybody, but I think for Michigan specifically, they're of any team in the conference, they're probably the worst matchup. So yeah, I mean, so now it's tournament time. I don't, we're going to talk about the ejection at all, or?
Well, I don't know if I have a ton to say about it. I mean, obviously he can't do that. That's why he was ejected. I mean, so, but you know, covering Juwan the past 2 years, he is not a, I don't expect that to become a thing Michigan has to worry about. I think that was, and he even said after the game, he said that didn't feel like me. He lost himself for a moment. So I don't particularly have a like grandiose lasting takeaway from it. You know, I do think it is something that like he has to learn from. It doesn't, you know, if he gets ejected in a postseason game and it's not Maryland, for example, say it's, well, we'll talk about this in a moment, like say it's like Florida State or Texas. I mean, suddenly that game can completely change. And you know, this is already a team, I'll transition back to the rest of the stuff, but it's already a team that's going to be a little shorthanded on on-court leaders. And so I guess that's my only takeaway is like, well, he doesn't do it very often, if ever. I think he's had, what, three techs all year? And I feel like they were all, two of the three were like justified. You know, getting one after the Brad Davidson's elbow to Mike Smith's head, you know, like that's the right, I'd argue that's a good tech. So I don't know. I don't have much. I don't know if you had anything to say on it. I don't really care about the whole, what did he say? Will there be repercussions? You know, I don't really care. Clearly, the Big Ten clearly did not think that there was enough to suspend. I don't know if that was even discussed, suspend him or anything like that.
I don't know. Obviously, there's some, it's weird, like, just all these teams want to be like rivals with Michigan. It's like, I don't know what it is about what's going on in Ann Arbor that's pissing everybody off. But between Illinois and Maryland, you know, you got two more teams on the conference that it just feels like Michigan is going to be their number one, like the team that they're going to get up for the most, you know, going forward. It was clear his reaction. This is something that had to have been boiling from the last two. Yeah. On both ends from the last two games that they played, you know, and like, I don't know. I was like, Morsell seemed to really want to stir it up. And I know he got injured in the first game, but if I recall, that was a completely incidental play by Wagner, right? Wasn't it just going up for a rebound and he elbowed him? It wasn't like a
Yes. I don't think – I mean, if it had been intentional, he would have been suspended.
Right. I mean, it was
– I don't think that was even a discussion. But I do think there it was a game where, if I remember correctly, I think Maryland
– Was it already chippy? It was already chippy because of the Dickinson stuff, right?
Right, right. Well, and I know our Maryland – site has pointed out, like, I mean, Dickinson, he probably took it too far. You know, he's a freshman. I don't really care. I personally, I love smack talk. I've always felt sportsmanship's a little overrated, but I think you could say Dickinson in terms of, like, I can see where Maryland is really mad about this.
Why? They didn't recruit him.
Yes, they did. Yes, they, okay. So the Washington Post did a full investigative story on it.
Okay. All right. Then. All right. No, let's not, we don't need to go into it,
but
it makes way more, it makes way more sense that way then, because they don't have anybody on their roster right now that's over like 6'8", 6'9".
Right.
And the whole time they're saying on the telecast that Maryland didn't really recruit him that hard. And I'm like, how the hell would they not recruit him?
Well, so that's part of the controversy is Dickinson said that and played like someone who didn't get recruited.
Right.
If I don't know, I'm not trying to like start a thing. I just don't think Dickinson liked Turgeon.
Sure.
And that happens. And it happens with Michigan, you know, there'll be a guy that you think is like from the backyard and they just don't click with the coaches. So I guess we'll find out. We can go read the Washington Post story, but they did a full story and their conclusion based on talking to DeMatha coaches, Maryland coaches, was that Dickinson was indeed recruited. Anyway,
he had that actually makes me feel better, because it made no sense for Maryland given what their roster looks like on paper this season, that he'd have been a perfect fit for them, you know, much like he was for Michigan. But you can almost say of any other team in the conference, that he'd have been a better fit for them than almost anybody, them and probably what, like State maybe, I don't know. So
yeah, well, I will say, I mean, you know, and there'll be a story about this probably later this week that I'm kind of working on. Dickinson and Juwan Howard are a perfect fit,
right?
I know exactly what you're saying. Like, which team has used 7-foot centers and doesn't have one this year? The answers are, well, it's really Maryland, Michigan State. They've never been like the 7-footer type of team. But I agree with you. Maryland really could use him. I don't know. We spent too much time talking about it.
I agree. It was interesting. It was interesting though. Yeah. I mean, if Dickinson returns next season, it's something we're going to be talking about again when these two teams play, I assume. So,
yeah. Well, and you bring up a good point with the other teams. I think Michigan is the most hated team in the Big Ten right now. You know, Illinois and Maryland had kind of like the social media swelling. But I've noticed Iowa. I've noticed, well, obviously Michigan State and Ohio State. You know, I really think you could run through the list, and it really makes me wonder, because we haven't been able to sit like by the court to like hear how things go during games. I said Juwan Howard's a very calm coach and kind of mild mannered. He does talk a lot, and he is not afraid to talk to players. I don't know if that's a personality thing or you know, NBA opponents talk to each other all the time, so maybe it's not as big of a deal. But I have noticed, you know, he'll talk to players on the opposing team during timeouts, things like that. So I don't know. This is not me saying I think so, but I have noticed what you've noticed, where Michigan is starting to be hated, and not just because they're the best team. It feels like, I don't know if it's Dickinson, because Dickinson is like the ultimate evil villain dominant center. Every good Big Ten team seemingly has like the evil, like the center that everyone hates. You know, Michigan's actually had a couple in recent years. And so I've noticed what you've noticed, though. Back and who's gone, but you know, same with Illinois. I think they'll have some roster turnover as well. Sure. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how these tensions develop. And also, I mean, Juwan Howard, he is only what 50 games into his career, maybe 60. So I don't know. In my opinion, he lost his cool. He knew he lost his cool. He apologized after the game. Unless more comes out of the story, I don't have much more to say about it.
Sure. Yeah. That was worth talking about, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, people, like, when Michigan wins, like, this is the 1% message board purse poster in me. Just feels like when Michigan's winning, like, people get pissed. When they're losing, they're the first team that people want to crap on. You know, this
happens in football, too.
That's what I'm saying, though, is like in football, everyone, you know, people, so many random fan bases seem to just thrive and love when Michigan is down or when they get beat or when they're losing, you know. And I also kind of wonder if the social media stuff from the fan side of things, because that's what I mean, is like social media for Michigan fans has mostly been a negative experience because it's always the football team like letting everybody down and when they need it most. So when they're winning, I think Michigan fans are crowing harder, louder, and more than they ever have before, you know? And I think it angers, because the other teams' players and stuff, they see that stuff too. You know, it's not just the fans. So yeah, you kind of wonder, but.
Well, yeah. And Michigan fans, which honestly, this is to me, I mean, the word fan is short for fanatical. So you should go nuts when your team does well. I've always kind of laughed. Everyone can root for their team how they want. I've always kind of laughed, though, because, you know, working the phone calls, doing the message board, when like the fans are like tempering themselves, are like, whoa, I got to stay calm. We got one game at a time here. And I'm kind of like, you're not on the team. You can talk all the talk you want. Like,
dude, I've said that for years. Like, how do you, like, when they're, I know in football, like they play Michigan State in 2 weeks and they are playing like Rutgers the week before, and we might post something about the Michigan State game, and like, right, the reaction on the board is like, well, you know, I got to focus on Rutgers. And it's like, well, we don't, I could write all week.
Heck, you don't.
In 2 weeks, who cares? That doesn't have any impact on how the game is turns out. And then, yeah, we could go off on those tangents for a good 8 minutes.
Right. But anyway, I did notice, you know, the whole, I almost did a story on the mass replies to the opposing team's like final game score tweet whenever Michigan won. I mean,
that'd have been funny. That's pretty, those, like a few of those kind of cracked me up actually when I started to catch on to those and check those out.
And like when they beat Wisconsin, it was like 1200 replies. And so I could see where, you know, the opposing fan base are like, screw these guys. Like, so anyway,
what did I don't remember who they beat not too long at. They stopped posting updates like with like 6 or 7 minutes left to go
And didn't their final score include like they turned replies off?
Something like, yeah, no. So it was like, 600 quote tweets,
yeah,
or something instead. So no, that's all just all in fun. That's kind of,
that's my thing is, I don't know, if you're taking it too serious or if you're taking it too personally, you know, if you get offended by fan smack talk, that's fine, but there's going to be fan smack talk, and I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon. As you know, social media, it's only growing. So it's, I can see where I mean, part of it is just like Michigan's history, and Michigan fans do have a lot of passion. I mean, that's, you know, that's why our branch of the 24/7 network, has, you know, such an active message board, such an active social media page. And so, I don't know. I've always really appreciated it that Michigan, it isn't like just when Michigan is good, and it isn't just for football or just, you know, the good sport. I mean, it's like, you know, I think in about a month, Michigan fans are going to be smack talking on social media about baseball and softball. And so it's kind of cool as a reporter to see it. But I can definitely see where like opposing players and opposing fans take issue with it. Plus Michigan definitely talks smack. This is the whole irony. We talked about this a couple of years ago with the Do More Say Less. This is a smack talking basketball team. You know, they're not like, I mean, maybe it doesn't come through on TV, but like, you know, Franz talks some talk. I mean, Hunter Dickinson, you know, kind of has that evil villain. I mean, Eli Brooks and Isaiah Livers, as nice as they seem in press conferences, I mean, you know, they're really competitive. And so, and they're good. I mean, again, you know, opposing teams aren't mad at the team that they're beating by 25. You know, they're kind of more mad at the team that's beating them by 25. So, anyway, real quick on the Big Ten tournament. Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think there are things to be encouraged by. I think the comeback at the end, I think that there can be, there's potential for that like synergistic, I guess, build off of the adversity, you know, thinking about Isaiah Livers, thinking about, you know, having a team or a senior leader on the bench. Cause when Franz went out with a foul, and this is not a diss on Franz, but I think the team was like started to play like they had nothing to lose. And how many times does a one seed play like that? Now they lost, and that's, we can talk about plenty of reasons to be discouraged. I think the shooting has really fallen off, both from 2-point range and 3-point range. I think Ohio State, not a particularly good defensive team, really kept Michigan away from the rim until like the final 5 minutes. And so I think there's plenty of things to kind of look at and say, well, I don't know if this, I mean, it's an interesting situation because they are a one seed. Their record is a one seed. But I think if you look at the last 5 or 6 games, they haven't really looked like a one seed. They've looked almost like a scrappy 4 seed or scrappy 5 seed. And so it'll be an interesting mental dynamic because there are definitely, I'm going to ask you about this in a moment. You know, Isaiah Livers' loss is definitely significant, but does it make some players play with a little bit of a fire under them? I thought Hunter Dickinson, you know, who's kind of, I don't want to say down. He hasn't been what he was in January since January. I think he's kind of struggled to make his presence known, and he had a good matchup size wise, but you know, he seemed like a man possessed at times against Ohio State. And, you know, what does Franz Wagner bring to his first NCAA tournament action, you know, but also potentially his last NCAA tournament action? We saw his brother really rose to the occasion in the postseason. So, you know, curious to see what he brings. A lot of seniors. So anyway, putting that aside, because we'll talk about how they stack up in their bracket in the second half of the show. The Isaiah Livers loss, it's huge. Can't be overstated or exaggerated. But Steve, I guess your thoughts on sticking to the on-court stuff instead of the broader leadership stuff. How big of a loss is this? I would argue this is the one position they actually had, you know, the depth at, but obviously his shooting, his scoring consistency. How big of a loss is this in your mind in terms of their ceiling and also maybe their floor, what they look like in the NCAA tournament?
I think not that he maybe wasn't already Michigan's most important player, even if Livers was healthy, but I think there's zero doubt now that Franz Wagner, not just, I think his ability to get in the lane is going to be paramount if Michigan is going to make a run in the tournament. Livers was Michigan's best 3-point shooter. Smith and Brooks, driving the lane is not, you know, getting into the lane is not their strength, at least off the dribble. Brooks is good, I think, off ball with his cuts. You know, I think he can get in the lane, get to the basket, but it is not their strength. I think they're going to need to get Wagner in the lane a little bit more because they're going to have to hit outside shots, and it's going to be Smith and Brooks and Brown, maybe even Johns, are guys that are going to have to hit enough from outside so that teams aren't just going to pack in their defense and try to slow Dickinson down, right? And I think the best way to do that is for Franz off the dribble, get in the lane, either throw up that patented kind of runner that he's mastered and score some baskets, or some drive and dish, you know, drive it and kick it out type stuff to get some guys some more open shots than they're going to get otherwise. So I think that's the biggest thing. Yeah, because again, Livers, I think, was the one, not the one guy, but Livers, best three-point shooter, but also a guy that could make it in a little bit of traffic too, right? You know, not a guy that has to be wide open to hit a three-pointer. So that's why I thought Mike Smith's performance against Maryland was really encouraging, you know, and he didn't repeat it against Ohio State, but he did come on in the second half, though. He was really one of the catalysts that kind of made that, you know, help him make that run late, or at least kept him in position to make that late run. So, you know, that's why I think, yeah, I think Wagner and really maybe even a guy like Chandy off the bench who can hit threes. We've talked about him all year as a guy is really kind of an on or off guy from the perimeter, and was way off against Ohio State until he hit that last shot that put it to within one. Right. So I think those, I don't know, I guess those are the two biggest things. Cause I think, yeah, I think you're going to see, it'll just be interesting to see how Michigan is defended, because you wonder if the attention will be focused on Dickinson and teams are going to force Michigan to shoot to beat them. That's what I would do. You know, I don't know. I haven't looked close enough at the bracket to know which teams can maybe take Dickinson one-on-one. You know, but his ability to kick out as well. But I think
probably not the first weekends,
right? It's, you know, so I think they could get to the Sweet 16 on Dickinson with Dickinson's abilities. You know, I think he's capable. You know, we're just assuming they beat the 16 seed, right? I mean, it's just
yeah.
But at that point, though, yeah, you talk about Florida State. I don't have to look. I know Florida State's got guys' length. You know, I think Franz is going to be really important. Again, he already was, but I just think that thing, that part alone, his ability in the lane, off the dribble, teams are obviously keying on his right hand all day, as they should, because he does have a tendency to try to work it into driving to the right. But I think he's got to get in the lane, score a couple baskets, and maybe help open things up for Brooks, Smith, Brown on the perimeter.
Yeah, I agree. And your perimeter point, that's where I wonder. Brandon Johns can shoot from three. I mean, he can, but I don't think he's gonna. I think he feels like the stylistic difference between him and Isaiah Livers is he's a little bit more physical. I think he's arguably stronger, maybe not as quick. He is almost more of a post player, and he has been practicing at the five all season. And I mean, his stat line against Ohio State, 7 points, 8 rebounds, but no made shots. I mean, that's a stat line of like a backup center, really. And so, yeah, when he and Dickinson or he and Davis are in the game, it almost seems like a too big lineup. And so that's where I wonder, you know,
he's got to take that shot. He's got to take the shot though, at some point, because it's, I think even just, you know,
oh yes.
And right.
He will.
But, yeah. But I thought he had a couple chances against Ohio State to at least take the shot, and he didn't. Did he? He didn't attempt a three, did he?
I think he attempted one.
Did he? Okay. Maybe I missed.
Yeah. And so far this season, he is 6 for 14. So that's actually not a lot of attempts. In the past, he's attempted more. So we'll have to see. I don't know if some of that is, you know, he did look like someone who was playing, if I can be blunt, he looked like someone who was playing kind of looking over his shoulder all season, in terms of he didn't want to get pulled for making a risky mistake. And that's tough to play through. I don't know. I mean, I think you could argue it happens in Little League and high school as well. So it's a different kind of situation now where he's expected to be the starter. But for that reason you said, I think there's actually a lot of benefit. I get why Chandy Brown wants to come in off the bench. I think there is some benefit to him playing more minutes than Johns, though. and maybe have Franz play like a Duncan Robinson style four, where he will play defense, but especially against some of these teams that don't have a 230 pounder at the four, spread the ball out a little bit and make them defend somebody other than Dickinson. Because yeah, I think St. Bonaventure, they've got a 6'10 guy who's pretty good at blocking shots. LSU, I know they're not a great defensive team, but I mean, they do recruit at a pretty high level. They've probably got a couple good athlete big men who can at least serviceably hold their own. And so, yeah, I think spreading the court out is really, really important. I think the defense, even though Isaiah Livers wasn't known for his defense, I think that's where it became a little bit more of an issue for Ohio, or against Ohio State. Yeah, I think Ohio State was able to get to the post more. I think they were able to create mismatches more often, because Livers, I mean, there's a lot of guys who can quote unquote defend three different positions. He legitimately could defend three different positions, right, at a truly good level. And I think I Eli Brooks, great defender. He can't defend a guy 6'6".
Yeah, Washington's a tough matchup for him.
Yep. And Wagner can defend three positions as well. But you can see where Ohio State's kind of enjoying that scouting report a little bit more, but they're like, oh, well, Livers can't just switch on anybody. You know, if we get a certain guy on Johns, it's over. If we get a certain guy on Brooks, it's over. Or Shondi Brown. I think he can really defend two positions well. And then I think, you know, the point guard and the big forward types might have a little bit of a mismatch on him. So,
well, who was it? Was it Suing that had a really good game, right? He was a non-factor the first time the two teams played.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been the guy that Livers almost assuredly would have been matched up with.
Well, he only had 9 points, but it felt like a lot. He had 5 free throw attempts. He only made 1 of them. So if he makes a couple more, then suddenly he's another double digit scorer. So, and CJ Walker, 7 points off the bench. Key actually had a decent game. So yeah, it just seemed like, you know, cause I think Franz fouled out. It seemed like he was put in a couple like defending the post situations that he wasn't comfortable with. Johns had 3 fouls. That's probably roughly what you can expect for how physical he is as a player. But I think offense versus defense, I think you go either way. I think it's just Livers' versatility, both offensively going inside and outside, and then defensively being able to really defend a multitude of types of players. It's going to be tough. It's going to be more than just the leadership, more than just it's a senior who has played a national title game, you know, who started in a national title game. It's going to be a pretty big deal. I just to make sure we cover our bases or talk about the topics that fans want us to talk about. He has not closed the door on returning. Alex Wong, Michigan's trainer, has also not closed the door on him returning, but it is a long way to go. Wong was on the Inside Michigan Basketball radio show, and he said the first step is making sure he can walk pain-free. And if that hasn't happened, you know, a lot can change. And I think Tim McCormick pointed out there is a 14-day window between Michigan's when Livers was out and when the Sweet 16 would start for them. A lot can happen in that time, but I'm operating under the expectation that he will not return. I think if him returning would be a surprise and maybe like a bonus. Michigan has to operate under the impression that this is what they've got. So I know people would ask like our thoughts on that. So I just wanted to point that out. I did write a story. He wants to come back. But I think Alex Wan pointed out it's walking, then it's jogging, then it's running, then it's shooting and jumping, and then it's planting your feet and, you know, kind of the change of direction stuff. So it's on the outer part of his foot in the toe kind of ball of your foot area. I think the change of direction might make it really tough without being a doctor. But yeah, just wanted to get that out there because I know people would ask. I know it's something fans are excited about. I would keep your expectations low. Doesn't have to be zero, but like if you're filling out a bracket, don't say, oh yeah, he'll be back for the Sweet 16 just yet. Anything to add on Liver's absence?
No, I mean, I think we covered it all. I think defensively, yeah, but also, yeah, been their most consistent three-point shooter too. I think it's, I mean, you know.
Well, and he takes the shots. I mean, he's a high-volume shooter too, because right. Mike Smith has a great percentage. Yeah, I think Shondi Brown and Franz Wagner, actually, that might be something I've pointed out on Twitter. I mean, they were not lifetime very great shooters, and they have all shot really, really well this year. It did not show against Ohio State, but on the season, I think they're all above 38%, which is really phenomenal. So if they can do that in the tournament, then yeah, this team is in for a run. Speaking of that, on the other side of this quick break, we will talk about the bracket, the seeding, what it means, maybe a brief preview of the matchups. You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for waiting. Steve, real quick, significance of a one seed for Michigan. It's just the third time ever. Now, granted, they didn't start the seeding until 1985, but the 1986 team, 1993, 2021, that's it. What is the significance in your eyes of them being the one seed? Because there was talk about them possibly switching with Alabama. I know the selection committee even said they with Livers' injury and Michigan's, I guess, 2-5 finish to the season, they did take a peek at maybe making a switch there, but they ended up picking them one seed. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know. Do you think it helps on the recruiting trail? I mean, as a recruiting guy, maybe I should know that. I guess it's obviously not going to hurt. Really just comes down to who you think's better between the 3 and 4 seed in your region. Mm-hmm. Like, that's really the, you know, because it's very conceivable they could have been the 2 and maybe the matchup would have been better with whoever the 3 is. Although I don't know what history says, maybe I'm wrong. I feel like you do maybe like that 8-9 matchup, regardless of who it is, better than that potential 7-10. A lot of times 10 is like a team, both 7 or 10 could be like a hot team. Like I think UConn right now, mm-hmm. I think Michigan would rather be playing the winner of the 8-9 than potentially matching up with UConn in the second round. Right. Yes. So that's really where what it boils down to for me, but that's like really what the whole tournament is about is looking at who's in front of you and see what the matchups are. Cause there are teams, you know, like Illinois' toughest game in their bracket might be the second round. based on the metrics, right? I mean,
against Loyola.
Well, I think their top was it the Torvik site has him as a top 10, and I think I don't know KenPom not much
KenPom,
further.
KenPom has
probably not the toughest because that is a tough region because they do have Oklahoma State, and they do have
Houston.
Yeah, I think they did get Houston with the 2 seed. So, but I exaggerated a little bit, but you know, it's all about matchups. So to me, the only significance was, you know, looking at, you know, would you rather play Florida State or would you rather play Texas? Or is that 8 and 9 matchup a problem? You know, that's really what it comes down to for me. And we debated a little bit before we got on about Michigan's bracket a little bit. I think we're pretty much on the same page, but you know, a lot of people seem to like Florida State. You don't agree. You seem to like Texas a little bit more.
In terms of who's better between the two, yeah.
Well, or who would potentially give Michigan a worse matchup. But the other thing is, I think you're going to see quickly, I think most people are going to pick Michigan as the first 1 seed to lose.
You have to, don't you? Is there an argument for that not to be?
Baylor hasn't played much better than – hasn't their defensive numbers have fallen off a cliff since they came back from the COVID scare? But, yeah, I mean, no, because, of course, Gonzaga – I think Gonzaga-Illinois, despite – like Gonzaga's bracket, they got by far the easiest road on paper.
Mathematically, they should if they're sticking to the traditional seeding.
It doesn't look like they have the road that, because I think we both agree that Illinois probably has the toughest road to get there, right? Just off of first glance.
Yeah. First impression. I agree.
And then Michigan probably second, Baylor is probably third, but Gonzaga's road. I mean, they already beat Iowa by double digits earlier this season, didn't they? I mean,
that's not their fault. I mean, who else were you going to put?
Right. No, but either way though.
Sorry for beating everybody.
Right. Well, but Houston, Alabama, I think would have.
You think they're better than Iowa?
So I watched some of the Alabama LSU game, and I think people's initial response is, "Oh crap, Michigan might have to play LSU in the second round." I don't know. And that's the other thing too. You kind of learn in the tournament is like, you know, how real are the strengths of some of these conferences? You know, that's the other thing. It's like, it's hard to watch. Cause to me, the Big 12 looks like a conference that there are 4 or 5 teams in the Big 12 that could make the Final Four. I feel like
I agree. And history also agrees. They've been really good recently.
Oklahoma State's coming on at the right time. I think West Virginia is still a dangerous team. Like they're not a team I'd want to play, even though they've kind of sputtered, but really their losses have been to Oklahoma State and Baylor. Baylor, Kansas is always kind of hanging around. You know, they're quietly a 3 seed, which is, and you haven't really heard anything about Kansas this year, at least nationally. And here they are.
Yeah, I'm curious with them. Because you're right. They've won, I think, 9 of 10. Looks like it's 8 of 9 with an overtime loss at Texas as their only loss since February 6th. So
Texas Tech.
Uh-huh.
Right. Mac McClung. That was a good.
Chris Beard has proven he can get to the title game.
Absolutely. And honestly, well, we talk about Texas too, but I wouldn't sleep. I don't remember who's the 1 seed, but Oklahoma. I've watched Oklahoma play a few times this year. They feel like a pretty good team. I'm not picking them. They're an 8 seed. And I can't remember who the 1 seed is. It might actually be Gonzaga.
So Oklahoma lost 5 of 6 to close the season. And their only win was by 5 points over an Iowa State team that ranked outside the top 150 net rankings.
I'm picking them Elite Eight. So
okay. All right, cool.
Mark it down. But no, I watched them a few times this year. They looked pretty good. They got a couple guys that can, I think I got a big guy that can go inside and outside. That's pretty good. And then one of their guards, but either way, I think the Big 12 is always, you know, right there with the ACC and the Big 10, you know, that's what you always kind of learn though. You know, what about then you got the Pac-12 kind of hanging out there. A lot of the metrics seem to like USC and Mobley is a guy. That's kind of a guy. I hope unless the Pistons get the number one pick and take Cunningham, that'd be a guy I'd love to see in a Pistons uniform. I mean, he looks just different as a post guy. So, But yeah, no, overall though, for Michigan, you know, Florida State, I'd rather be on their end of the bracket than the two seed, right? But that just is because that's just the way the matchups seem to play. You know, like Alabama, UConn could be a really, really interesting second round matchup. Texas, you know, Shaka Smart, they have really good, you know, he grew his hair out. you know, and they kind of look like really good now. And so
very experienced team.
Yes. They're explosive returned. Too. They got some guys that can throw it up. I mean, I've actually randomly watched a lot of Big 12, and Texas has been consistently impressive. But yeah, no, I mean, if liver, again, we were talking about livers or whatever, if livers was fully healthy, I think I'd probably be picking Michigan to go
to the Final Four.
I think so. If he was 100%, I would feel if they got out of the Sweet 16, if they got to the Elite Eight, they would beat whoever came out of the bottom side of the bracket. That's my initial sense. But now it's just a matter of who can step up. I think they're still there. I definitely think they're still capable, mm-hmm. but it's just, my concern now is one off night shooting is going to sink them. And an off night shooting is going to sink a lot of teams, but now you don't have livers on the defensive end of the floor you talked about earlier. I think it just puts more and more pressure on them to consistently shoot the ball well from the perimeter. And I don't know if they've shown, you know, that they can do that, you know, on a night to night basis without him in there.
Yeah. I agree. And I almost wish from an evaluation standpoint, we could have seen them play a game without livers against a team that isn't a two seed. Cause like, they're not going to play a team at Ohio State's caliber, at least I don't think, until, I mean, it would be like the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. So it's tricky because like they lost by one to Ohio State. On paper, that is not a bad loss. But it certainly, there was a lot about that game that was kind of has me and maybe many others second guessing what Michigan can accomplish this month. But when I look at this East region, it's really fascinating because it's a lot of teams that finished really strong. Georgetown is kind of storming along as maybe the most dangerous 12 seed I can think of. UConn, Maryland quietly finished strong. Alabama, Texas won conference titles for the first time. And well, for Texas, it was the first time ever. For Alabama, it was the first time since 1991. Florida State felt like, or actually, did they finish strong? I can't remember about them. Colorado.
Oh, 2-3 to finish. Remember, we were talking about that before the show.
Yeah, so they're maybe the exception, but Colorado, strong finish. I mentioned before the show, LSU and St. Bonaventure, Bart Torvik, similar site to KenPom. He has a slightly different formula, but he allows you to customize the and it's free, by the way, quick little plug. They allow you to customize the time frame that you want to look at their efficiency ratings. Since February 5th, I just did that date last 5 weeks, LSU and St. Bonaventure both playing at a top 20 level. Now, it's really tough to evaluate stuff because there was so little non-conference play this year, but that's not nothing. And so, yeah, a lot of teams playing some of their best basketball, but it's also a lot of teams that have not been in this situation before. Texas, I mean, Shaka Smart was on the hot seat entering this season. Alabama, when was that? I mean, have they ever been a one seed? If they have, it's been a very long time. Florida State's pretty experienced. They're maybe, again, the exception. Colorado, I don't think they're used to being where they are. You can run down the list. Georgetown, they were not doing so well the past few seasons. So it's a lot of teams that I'm very curious. I mean, Michigan, I guess without Isaiah Livers, they haven't been in the situation a ton, but I'm very curious to see how these teams perform because they are teams that are peaking at the right time. But how do they handle, I guess, maybe the pressures of the NCAA tournament? It might be different, might be nothing with you know, reduced capacity and everything. But a lot of kind of upstart teams. I made the joke the other day with Michigan, Colorado, Florida State, Texas, and Alabama. It's a lot of football schools, a lot of, especially in the 80s and 90s, a lot of BYU actually in there as well. And that's where I almost wonder if someone like Michigan State, you know, can they, can you know, just because their coaches have done it before, a lot of their players have been at least a part of the NCAA tournament before, can they kind of embrace the 2-day turnarounds that are needed to climb through this bracket? That's where I get a little intrigued by this stuff. But let's look at Michigan's half of the East bracket. So I'm with you. One big perk to the 1 seed versus a 2 seed. I think you can more realistically write off your first game. I mean, obviously you have to show up and play and, you know, scout, but you know, way more 2 seeds get upset than 1 seeds. And I don't think that's coincidence. I mean, the 16 seeds are worse, and Michigan, based on KenPom's ratings, are playing the worst 16 seeds. So yeah, it's really LSU versus St. Bonaventure. Steve, I'll let you go first, because I think we actually have different opinions on this. Which of these two teams should scare Michigan more?
So I'm still going with LSU. I know the St. Bonaventure is kind of the hot name. Watch, and again, maybe I'm not going to sit here and say I've watched
sure
LSU a ton, right? But I did watch a healthy amount of the LSU-Alabama, the SEC championship game. Alabama has one of the best defenses in the country. Their defense is kind of what they've built their name on this year, I want to say. I mean, they have good, solid offense, but defensively they've been really, really strong. So I'm still going with LSU as being the bigger matchup. Who's the kid? Who's the kid that's my one of my Thomas? Theories. Yeah, my theory is
Cameron Thomas.
Yes, is based mostly on the Dwayne Washington theory. As far as like Michigan, just, and this is more like just how do you say it? Like a gut feeling and tangible, like just, it just seems like Michigan catches guys that just play out of their mind. You know, we talk about, granted, they weren't going to beat Illinois either way, but like Trent Frazier couldn't miss when Michigan played Illinois. Dwayne Washington's gone off against Michigan twice. I just, teams, guard play is always so pivotal in the tournament. And, you know, Thomas is a guy that's just one of, again, he is one of those guys also could pull like a Marcus Carr and go 6 for like 23, right? Well, no, I mean, that's very possible, right? Well, but Carr's, there's another guy though that's had huge games against Michigan in the past. Now, not, he hasn't had all of them have been great, but either way, just Cameron Thomas feels like that a guy, the type of guy who just could go off and have a big game. And like, that's when Michigan seems to struggle, is when opposing, like, good guard play gives them fits. Now it gets everybody fits, but for Michigan specifically, just, I don't know, they make me a little more nervous just because they've played a lot of, you know, in a relatively decent conference. I'm not going just off of conference stuff, but like you mentioned before the show, St. Bonaventure played a couple of non-conference games total, right? Like played like 2 or 3 non-conference games all year. So either way, I think both
teams... Yeah, just two. Sorry.
Right.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. I think both teams present like interesting matchup. You know, the strict statistics of LSU's defense is terrible. And that's one thing I think maybe you could hang your hat on if you're Michigan, that they should be able to score on LSU. But I'm still going to go with LSU. I know St. Bonaventure is the hot name, but I think I'd rather play the Bonnies if possible.
That's fair. I mean, St. Bonaventure, they have higher ratings. They have higher, I don't know, the advanced statistics like them a little bit more. But they have only played 2 non-conference games, and I believe it was Hofstra and Akron. But I actually am going to go with the Bonnies as the tougher matchup for Michigan, in part because of defense, in part because they are pretty darn good at keeping teams away from the rim. Now, this is the Atlantic 10, so we'll have to see. But they do have a big man. Their big men are actually bigger than LSU's. I don't know if LSU does that by design or what, but you know, they got a big man. I'll work on pronouncing his name, but Osun, I think, is his first name. 6'10", you know, kind of lengthy, good at blocking shots. One of the better shot blockers Michigan would face all season. So they don't have the scoring firepower LSU does, but man, it just seems like they're able to keep teams away from the rim. You know, keep teams away from the foul line a decent amount, and then ultimately just force a lot of contested shots and a lot of misses. They have competent guards as well, guys who can. Not going to compare to Illinois, not going to compare to Ohio State, but can kind of at least keep up with someone like Eli Brooks, keep up with someone like Mike Smith. So, I think they might actually be the worst matchup, but I am with you. I think there is something to be said. Thomas is a five-star point guard, 6'4". By nature of being a five-star, I assume he has, you know, NBA-level athleticism. Haven't watched a ton of him, and they did just play Alabama well, right? And so, and I one thing I'm kind of looking at with this bracket, I kind of think the SEC is sneaky good this year. I think that they had a lot of teams that weren't ready. Just a lot of young teams or new-ish coaches that weren't really ready in non-conference play. So their metrics look a little bit worse, but I think they quietly have a pretty good set of teams in the NCAA tournament. So I can see both sides. I mean, 8-9 game, right? It should be a toss up more or less. But I kind of think St. Bonaventure might be the worst matchup. Anyway, we don't have to do full predictions. We'll see if we have a time window for another episode. Media availability is kind of limited this week, so I'm not really sure how much will change in terms of our opinions, but without Isaiah Livers in the NCAA tournament, I'm going to, the first game's at Mackey Arena on Saturday. The second game would be on Monday. I guess your confidence level that Michigan advances, just knowing that they are at least somewhat shorthanded. And then also maybe one key to the weekend, Michigan needs to do blank to make sure that they don't get upset early in the NCAA tournament.
So I do think they get through to the Sweet 16. Biggest key for me, probably keeping Dickinson out of foul trouble. We talk about this; these two games are games that he should have at least semi-favorable matchups in, and should be able to get some decent looks, or at the very least create some great looks for his teammates. So I do think Michigan gets through, and I think that's going to be the key. Really interested. You know, I think if he picks up a foul in the first 2 minutes, I think he'll sit right away. Right. Obviously, mm-hmm. But I'll be interested to see if he makes it to like the 14, 13 minute mark. Does Michigan just spell him right away, just to give him some rest, even if he doesn't have a foul, or do they kind of ride him a little bit longer knowing, you know, there's only two games in a 4-day set, and then they could get a week's rest. You know, do they try to ride him a little bit more? You know, I know now game factors will play a role in that. You know, if Michigan gets out to a good lead, they'll probably try to rest him, obviously. But if say the 8-9 game is close, you know, do they ride him if he stays out of foul trouble? So I think that's really going to be the key. Outside of what we talked about already with Wagner getting in the lane, but I'm thinking mm-hmm. with that, I'm thinking more of their if Michigan makes a run, it'll be because Wagner can get in the lane and make plays. But for this weekend, I think Dickinson, you know, should have a couple decent matchups and should be able to do some damage and open things up for everybody else.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident Michigan will advance out of this weekend as you normally would for a one seed, maybe less confident than I probably was. I mean, well, duh, but maybe less confident until I see Michigan play another game kind of without Livers. Cause I think doing it on a one night turnaround, I don't put a ton of stock into what happened. I think I'm very curious to see the X's and O's changes, the schematic changes, and also the personnel. I mean, Michigan will have had almost a week to kind of ruminate on how to play without Livers. And so again, probably, probably means nothing against a 16 seed, but you know, they'll show a little bit more in that 8-9 game. So they're a one seed. The perk of being the one seed is you don't have to play a top 25 team until the second weekend. So one would have to think, I mean, they're only three losses or four losses this year. Well, one came against Minnesota, but the other ones came against teams that are playing in the NCAA tournament as higher, you know, pretty decently high seeds. I guess State's an 11 seed. But my point is, I don't think that they're going to face anyone that can handle Hunter Dickinson one-on-one. And I also don't think they're going to play anyone that will have Michigan as figured out as Ohio State did, as Michigan State did, as Minnesota did. All teams that Michigan played the second time in Illinois, well, they're a one seed, you know, so that's the exception. So I'm pretty confident. I think the key, other than you made some good points about Dickinson being on the court, really helps. And I think also kind of continuing the momentum he found on Saturday, really the first time he's faced an opposing team for the second time and really still had that impact. So I think that's obviously one key. And then I think Mike Smith, I think he emerges as kind of the third scorer, and that role, I mean, he's used to that role. He scored a ton of points at Columbia. Correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, it felt like he took some shots that maybe he shouldn't have against Ohio State. A little bit of hero ball might be a stretch, but kind of where I was like, probably could have worked the clock down, probably yep. Could have passed it to somebody. And so I think the big thing for him will be finding his sweet spot between being a pass first guy, because he can't just pass anymore. I mean, they do need someone to score Isaiah Livers, what was it, 13.1 points per game, but maybe not trying to score at Michigan's detriment. So it'll be, some of that is dependent on shooting. Those shots look a lot like much wiser decisions if he makes them, but just felt like there were a couple like low percentage looks that he took when he was, you know, there's a hand in his face. And so I think him finding a sweet spot, because guard play does make a big difference. He showed against Maryland he can be a really terrific player. But even in that Maryland game, if I'm not mistaken, I think he shot 4-for-10 on two pointers. So knowing when to shoot, when to dump it to somebody else, that might be a quietly big key, especially, you know, if they end up facing LSU, I mean, he's going to have his hands full with Cam Thomas, or right. Is it Cam Thomas? Yeah. So it's, It'll be interesting. Obviously we'll have tons of coverage from Michigan's first weekend. We'll see. I mean, odds are decently high that they make it to the second weekend, but it is March Madness, so you never know. For Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Be sure to read all of our stories. Be sure to listen to all of our podcasts. Hope you had fun. Hope you learned something. We'll see you next time.
Okay. Picture this, it's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.